Herzlich willkommen zu Handelsblatt Rethink Work, dem Podcast rund um Mensch, neue Arbeitswelt und Führung. Ich moderiere diesen Podcast abwechselnd mit meiner Kollegin Kirsten Ludowig und ich bin Charlotte Haunhorst. Ich begrüße Sie zu einer neuen Folge Handelsblatt Rethink Work. Mein heutiger Gast ist ein richtiger Promi. John Strzelecki wurde bekannt als Autor von Büchern wie The Big Five for Life oder Das Café am Rande der Welt. Kernthese seiner Werke ist, man muss seinen eigenen Purpose for Existing finden, also den Zweck, warum man existiert. Und an diesem Purpose soll man dann auch sein Leben und eben auch seine Arbeit ausrichten. Strzelecki selbst zum Beispiel sagt, er existiere, um andere Menschen zu inspirieren und ihr Leben besonders zu machen. Diese zunächst ja doch eher simpel klingende Idee ist enorm erfolgreich. Strzeleckis Bücher haben sich weltweit mehr als 6 Millionen Mal verkauft. Das Café am Rande der Welt wird gerade in Deutschland von Til Schweiger verfilmt. Und nein, das habe ich mir gerade nicht ausgedacht. Ich konnte deswegen aber Strzelecki auch Ende Mai in Hamburg persönlich zum Interview treffen. Und man muss sich das so vorstellen, er kam da rein, er hat immer so einen Abenteurerhut auf dem Kopf. Und der ist so Indiana Jones mäßig, aber das beschreibt ihn auch so gut. Weil John Strzelecki ist eigentlich eine Marke. Und das finde ich auch so spannend an dem Gespräch mit ihm. Er lebt da einen Spagat zwischen, ja, sehr kapitalistischen Eigenschaften eigentlich. Also er verdient viel Geld mit diesen Büchern und redet da auch ganz offen drüber, dass ihm das wichtig ist. Und auf der anderen Seite stehen halt diese Lebensweisheiten, sei glücklich, tu das, was dich erfüllt. Und manchmal fragt man sich, wie passt das zusammen? Und er sagt halt auch, von diesem Geld kann er sich Freiheiten erkaufen, zum Beispiel um die Welt zu reisen. Und das empfiehlt er noch allen anderen. Und da habe ich teilweise gedacht, das ist auch eine ganz schön privilegierte Sicht auf die Welt, oder? Genau das konnte ich ihn ja glücklicherweise auch alles fragen. Und ich finde, er hatte oft auch sehr gute Antworten drauf gegeben. Da John Strzelecki Amerikaner ist, ist das folgende Gespräch jetzt auf Englisch. Viel Spaß beim Reinhören. Welcome, John. It's a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
First questions first, because I read a lot of different quotes on that. How often do your books get sold? Is it one book every 30 seconds, every 22 seconds, or do you still keep track?
Yeah, I think it's somewhere around every 19 seconds or so.
Okay.
Yeah, because we keep adding language. It's very awesome and humbling, but we keep adding languages. And so as more languages come on board, then readers in those countries get introduced to the cafe. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it more frequently. So, yeah.
So how did the COVID pandemic affect your book sellings?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was an interesting transition because I think more and more people went to audio. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a huge leap. I know for myself, the same thing. There was a huge leap where I started listening more to podcasts and listening more to audiobooks. Mm-hmm. When I would do my everyday activities like stretching or sort of other things that seem mundane, but when I added a little bit of audio, it worked mm-hmm. better. And so physical books declined because bookstores were closed worldwide mm-hmm. in so many countries, but the audio definitely picked up. So yeah, that was kind of cool. And we have here in Germany, we have an amazing guy who does the audio, Marcus Pfeiffer. So he's got a great voice.
I'm also asking, as you might imagine, because of the content of the books, because I think what you're writing about might have seemed hard to achieve before COVID. I tried to give a short resume now of your books to correct me if I leave something important out. But the Why Are You Here Café, in German, Das Café am Rande der Welt, exposes its reader to 3 basic questions. What is your purpose of existing? Are you afraid of death? And are you fulfilled? The other famous one, The Big Five for Life, wants its reader to align this purpose for existing by focusing every day on your big 5 goals for life. And as you wrote in one of your books, I think 95% write as one of these goals, traveling the world.
Right. Yeah. Travel is a huge piece of people's big 5 for life.
So what happened to this now? I think some people might feel it was frustrating reading about this now during COVID because you can't travel anywhere. On the other hand, a lot of people were re-questioning their life and their jobs. What right. kind of feedback did you get?
Yeah, 100% what you're just describing, actually. So people faced with mortality on a level that we've never seen during mm-hmm. the last 80-some years, where you're thinking about your life in a different capacity because it's not like it's guaranteed. Mm-hmm. For the last few decades leading up to this, it was like, yeah, this is what everybody does and they live to be 80. And then all of a sudden that whole paradigm got shaken up and there's so much uncertainty about our physical wellness. Mm-hmm. And because of that, people did, they started asking questions and taking more reflective moments around that question of, wait, do I fear death? Right? Because mm-hmm. it's not a matter of, do you fear dying? Character of Mike talks about this in Das Café am Rheinveld. It's not that we fear dying. What we fear is getting to the end of our life and realizing we haven't really lived. And so, yeah, this time off, this time locked in our houses definitely made people ask those, it inspired people, not made them, but it inspired people to ask those bigger questions. To your second point, while we couldn't actually physically go out and travel, mm-hmm. we live in such an amazing technological era. And so if your dream was to go to New Zealand, you could fill your time watching cool YouTube videos about mm-hmm. New Zealand. You could watch documentaries about New Zealand. You could watch amazing whale videos from New Zealand. So there was never a better time to prepare yourself for the moment when you could actually go.
But it's not the same.
It's not the same. You're 100% correct in that regard. And I know from our conversation that you're an adventure traveler and I am as well. That said, sometimes we forget the value of the preparation for the mm-hmm. adventure. And so, you know, the life is super, super busy up until June 2nd. And on June 2nd, I'm leaving on my trip. So you don't really pay attention until May 17th. And then for a couple of weeks, you kind of prep a little bit and then off you go. But COVID taught us that there can be tremendous joy in the prep time and the anticipation. Mm-hmm. And so now when you go and you actually take your trip to New Zealand, not only have you logged a whole bunch of really happy minutes learning about New Zealand, I also think that we will appreciate the fact that you can get on an airplane again pretty effortlessly mm-hmm. in a way that we never did before. At least not for, I never really thought about it. I just kind of took it for granted, but mm-hmm. now I really appreciate the fact that I can do it.
Yeah, and maybe we changed our expectations because I remember at the beginning when you could start traveling Germany, for example, like
right.
you lived in Germany and you were able to leave your house again
yeah.
to go to southern Germany, for right. example. That was already exciting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's funny how our perceptions of what's exciting changes based yeah. on whether we can or cannot do things. Yeah. For a while, you can even effortlessly go for a bike ride, right? I mean, there was rules and restrictions. Yeah.
So, but what about you? As you already said, you're an adventure traveler and you couldn't travel neither. I think in the US it was hard to as well.
Yeah. I mean, plane traffic was shut down. Everything was shut down. So what I found is that if I couldn't go on a big scale, then I had to look for opportunities to go do adventurous things close to where I lived. Mm-hmm. And that actually was great in some respects because many times you don't look at your surrounding areas because you can always do that. You know, you sort of don't really pay much attention to that. But yeah, my daughter and I did some amazing hikes. Mm-hmm. We did some great kayaking trips. So hiking, biking, and kayaking became our new form of adventure mm-hmm. all within 2 hours of our house.
But you also had to do some homeschooling, right? I think I read your daughter is 14?
She's 14 going on 15, yeah. And so she had done homeschooling where I was her teacher for 3 years. And then mm-hmm. these last 3 years, she actually did what's called virtual school. So it's a curriculum that's entirely online mm-hmm. at your own pace. So that was great because she would just crank away at stuff. And then when she got tired of doing it, she would go, we'd go do adventures.
Okay. So you're not one of these parents who thought about giving their children to adoption after COVID because it was so stressful homeschooling.
No, not at all, actually. So I know everybody's situation is different, but I have to say that I really enjoyed the time mm-hmm. with my kid. And that's been something that I think is an evolution over time. So we've been doing adventure days together since she was two. Mm-hmm. And we have a ton of time, a ton of history together. We have a great dynamic between the two of us and we look forward to spending time together. So no, it was no more unusual. In part, like you and I were talking offline, you did this amazing trip with your family. And I've done the same thing with my family for long, long adventures. And you learn to find a rhythm in those situations, mm-hmm. you know, which then just cascaded over into the COVID time.
Yeah. Another thing I wondered about with COVID, many people before could never imagine working abroad, for example,
right.
because they said you have to go to the office, you can only do your job here. And now we see that changes and it changes
totally.
Quickly.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Because I imagine somebody reading your book in 2007, where it says basically you want to go for an adventure. There was in the Big Five for Life, this guy who travels while doing his work. And I think at that time, everybody thought, yeah, okay, I can't do that. That's impossible.
I know. I heard two things when I used to spend time here in Europe. One was that they will never let people work remotely. And two, they would never let children do school remotely.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, they told me numerous times as a parent, I could never do what you're doing because it's illegal for me to do that. COVID has changed all the rules in that regard. And this is one of the things that's interesting about life. There is always the yin and yang to everything. So I am not happy at all that as humanity, we've gone through this pandemic. That said, there are aspects of this which have turned out to be really great things. It has propelled us to do things differently and to accelerate what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So now we have a whole different work world out there where you could live in the city of your choice that you might not have been able to before because your job was in a different place in the country. But now you can live on the beach and do your work for a company that's located in the mountains or the reverse. And that's, I think from a humanity perspective, that's awesome because you don't choose where you're born. People often feel constricted about where they can live. And now that whole game is changing. If you're good at what you do, you can probably do it from anywhere in the world.
So would you say now it's easier to find your purpose for existing and live a life that somehow connects to it?
I would say it's easier to make the connection happen. The flip side, though, I talk about this in Überraschung im Café am Rhein about the fourth book that, you know, technology has all these wonderful aspects of it, but it also has some dangers. And one of the dangers is something that I call in the book pleasantly occupied. And that is where we spend our time just kind of numbing our mind a little bit, just flipping through something on the screen. And so, yeah, technology can enable us to go do and see and experience amazing stuff in our life because it gives us flexibility. But if we're not careful, we succumb to the opposite of that and we just sort of sit there and do nothing and entertain ourselves sort of mindlessly, again, pleasantly occupied, not amazing, not bored, but just in the middle.
And what would help against that?
Well, having a definition in your mind of what you most want to do with your life is a big step in that regard. Because if you know that your dream is to go to New Zealand, then at least when you're sitting there in those moments of downtime, you can be watching cool videos about New Zealand. In the absence of that, there is that danger because it used to be that we would get bored and the boredom would inspire us to ask, well, wait, what would make me not bored? And so that was a good catalyst to change. So being more self-aware about it is a great first step. And then just making the conscious choice to feed yourself a healthy dose of inspirational content, whether that's, I want to learn to be a better football player, I want to be an amazing person who has a great relationship with their kids or whatever, but feed yourself that content versus just stuff.
A thing you were already touching now, which I found interesting in your books, I feel like there are two sides of John Strzelecki. On the one hand, there is the John Strzelecki talking about being happy, have a fulfilled life, go traveling around the world. And the other one has an MBA degree and is making a lot of profit by selling these books. And also the Big Five for Life has a large part, which is about how a company gets more profit by having satisfied employees. So how do these business side and these happiness side connect for you?
Right. I mean, that was my previous life, was on the business side. I had my MBA and I was a corporate consultant for many years where I would help companies be more successful. The question that I asked myself when I wrote the Big Five for Life book was based on the fact that people spend 70% of their awake life Monday through Friday, either at work, thinking about work or getting to work. And so I thought if I wanted to have a positive impact on the world, then thinking about how we would adjust the way we look at work would be a really good way to do that. And I've been delighted with the response because there's many leaders out there who are great leaders already doing some of the things that I talk about in the book who have come to me and said, this is the type of book that I would have written if I was an author. Because this idea of doing right by your people and then they will do right by the organization. Aligning people's interests with the job that they do. Like this stuff sounds so simple and straightforward and obvious, and yet most companies don't do it well. So it's a great growth opportunity for a company looking to do things better.
Maybe it's just in my head, but I always felt like people who are preaching about the purpose in life, be happy, do whatever suits you best, have a happy life. I never connected it to, and you can also be really, really successful for money, for example, with that.
Right.
And so I wondered, is that something that's driving you as well, making money out of the whole book writing and coaching, or is it just a side effect you happily take?
Well, I've discovered something about myself during this process, which is a huge thing that every entrepreneur, every single person who wants to achieve a degree of financial independence mm-hmm. is worth listening to. And that is that when you do things that you love, people are going to want to say thank you. Mm-hmm. And whether you're creating music and therefore you've got your music out on Spotify and iTunes and the rest of that, or you're writing books or making movies that or creating a product, that people will want to say thank you. And mm-hmm. in our current era, the way they say thank you is they buy whatever it is that you've created. Mm-hmm. And so we don't barter anymore. It's not like you're going to trade me a bag of rice and I'm going to give you a chicken or something mm-hmm. like that. That just doesn't, not the way that we say thank you anymore. And so if you're not comfortable with this idea that people are going to say thank you, and part of the result of that thank you is financial return, mm-hmm. you will end up sabotaging your own success. And this is what I did for decades in my life. People would say to me, like, I'd be doing something that was going really, really well. And then I would either blow it up and destroy it through my own behavior, or I would just quit and go do something else. And I had so many friends who said to me, I just don't understand it. Like, you're so on the edge of great success with this project that you're working on. Why would you leave now? And I could never understand why that was either, but I never really gave it much thought until one day it really hit me that when I was a child and growing up, I had already identified that one of my core values was kindness mm-hmm. and high integrity. So, mm-hmm. you know, do good things for good people in good ways. And when I was raised in an environment that said if someone had a lot of money, they still could be very nice, of course, but they must have ripped somebody off at some point. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that was the way that I was raised. I don't think it was done with malice. I don't think they were trying to create problems for me, but that was just the way that, you know, my father in particular had been raised, and that was the way he raised me. Well, as you can imagine, this creates a major conflict yes. because if you believe that in order for someone to have wealth, they must have ripped people off, and you have integrity as a high value, well, then the more successful I became, the more people wanted to say thank you. They said thank you by giving me money, buying my products, services, whatever. And then I felt like, oh my gosh, if I'm getting more money, I must be someone who rips mm-hmm. people off, and I don't want to be that way. So I will just leave. Mm-hmm. Well, this is not a great path to success. If you want to, you know, write music that inspires people, you better get comfortable with the fact that someone is going to buy your song. So this was a huge transition for me. Once I made that transition and got my head around that and got in a better headspace with that, things really took off for me. And what's interesting is you only need one data point to change that. So if you can think of one person who has done really good things for a lot of people and they've gotten wealthy because of it or had financial success because of that, then you can stop holding the false belief that I was holding that they must be ripping people off.
So did you feel guilty at the beginning for making money out of it?
No, once I made that transition to it, I was able to accept the fact that I was part of something that was much bigger than me, which is certainly the case with the cafe stories, especially. I feel that I get to be the steward for the cafe world, mm-hmm. not that I am necessarily the creator of that world. And then I got comfortable with the fact that we were getting so many beautiful letters from people saying that the books had changed their lives, that it inspired them. And then interacting with fans, I remember distinctly a young woman who I had signed a book for her. Her mom had given it to her, and then she sent me a letter. In the letter, she said, I'm 17 years old, and I've been in and out of hospitals for years with an eating disorder. And reading this book, it was Das Café am Roundabout, for the first time in a very long time, I want to live. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, you get letters like that and you realize like you're part of something really special. And if you don't embrace that, then maybe the next kid who's in that situation isn't going to get the book. Mm-hmm. That's not the reality that I want. I want people who are struggling, who feel alone, to realize that they're not alone and that they don't necessarily have to struggle, that there's answers out there.
Mm-hmm. I feel like...
What makes you ask the question though?
In my head, somebody who lives for the happiness of others might live in a yurt eating berries he finds himself and like does not depend on money. I don't mm-hmm. know why, but somehow that was always the image in my mind. And I found it interesting now that in your book, it's not about just love everybody, love life, and you'll be happy. It's also about, yeah, but you need money for making it work. I thought that quite realistic.
Yeah, I don't think I necessarily say that you need money. And I can see the image that you're coming from. Like that would be Mother Teresa would be a good example of that. Someone yeah. who did tremendous good for the world for so many people and lived in a state of poverty in India. That's one option. That's mm-hmm. one path you can choose. I guess the progression for me is realizing that that's not the only option. And that in our society, and in truth, you would say that had Mother Teresa not been comfortable with money mm-hmm. and people donating to the organization so that she could then feed homeless people and take care of people that suffered from disease and leprosy and the rest of that, had she not had positive money beliefs, supportive money beliefs, she would not have been able to succeed at the level she succeeded either.
Yes, but I also feel like it's realistic that to fulfill some of your dreams, you need money. That's part of the game because
sure.
I think it's a point in your book I thought a lot about. Basically, you're saying if you find your own purpose for existing, you should live a life that gets along with that. And I thought a lot about in Germany, a lot I know from socioeconomic studies, for example, people who grew up poor tend to stay poor. Mm-hmm. People who have parents that went to university, like me, are very likely to go to university as well, to have a job. And then I'm in the condition to spend time thinking about my career, going for travels, because I grew up safe and I can live that life. And so I think there's still a difference for people reading your book who grew up in, yeah, like the girl in your new book, Hannah, who grew up in a condition that's very hard, and you still try to show she can make decisions on her own concerning her life.
Yeah, 100%.
I wondered, does it work? Like, there's still people have different backgrounds and not everybody can fulfill their dreams.
I would disagree with that. And I grew up poor, so I can tell you that it's not possible. It's not impossible mm-hmm. to bridge the reality of growing up that way and transitioning to a life where you're not like that. Mm-hmm. What the missing step for me for a long time was the awareness of, what do I actually have to do to go from this life to an alternate mm-hmm. version of reality? Mm-hmm. I was motivated enough to do it. I didn't really have the self-confidence to do it, which in part came from my background. Mm-hmm. But over time, you can build that self-confidence, especially if you have the information about how to make that leap. Mm-hmm. And so that I firmly believe that with enough awareness, with the right amount of personal motivation, that anyone can make that leap. I say that from my own personal experience. So you can certainly find plenty of examples of someone who doesn't have the personal motivation. Mm-hmm. They're never going to make the leap. You can certainly find examples of someone who doesn't have the information either. They're probably never going to make the leap, although they might, because some people in those situations are just incredibly personally driven until mm-hmm. they find the information. But I guess what I love about the cafe stories, what I love about this new book is that my hope is someone who is struggling, who feels like they don't have the information, who doesn't have a clear path, that they'll find part of the answer in the story, you know, and they'll realize they are not alone, that there's other people who have struggled mm-hmm. with these same things and they've gotten out.
But is it harder for them?
Well, life is very fascinating. I talk about this in the character of Hannah. So Max is having an interesting discussion with Hannah and he says, sometimes our gifts are wrapped in unpleasant packaging. Mm-hmm. And so I started working when I was 12 years old. I worked incredibly hard throughout my life and developed a fantastic work ethic. I'm not sure I would have developed that work ethic had I not grown up in the environment in which I grew up in. So mm-hmm. at the time, it didn't seem so great, but the result of that has proven to be very good in that when I need to work, I work. When I'm on my own, I don't need someone to motivate me to work. Mm-hmm. I'm incredibly self-motivated. So sometimes these gifts come in unpleasant packaging. It's really a very fascinating discussion point because I know we were talking about kids earlier. I often think to myself, I wouldn't want my daughter to go through what I went through. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's important that she understands the importance of working hard. Mm-hmm. And so that's a balancing act when you come out of one environment to help share that with others without necessarily wishing upon them the same experience that you had.
Yeah, and I also thought, to fulfill your personal big five, sometimes you need to be egoistic, right? Like if I say, for example, I want to travel the world, but my son still needs to go to school in Germany because, as you said before, it's not allowed to do homeschooling here, then I'd have to make a choice. I leave him here and say bye-bye, or I put that to later in my life and wait for him to be ready to join me. But if I really want to focus on myself, I need to leave other people out, right?
Not necessarily. It's rare that I come across someone who has their big five for life and it has nothing to do with other people. Matter of fact, I would say it's 90%+. Mm-hmm. It always has to do with other people. Mm-hmm. And so in your example, you found a creative way to do that when your son was younger. And if you wanted to find a creative way to do it again, my guess is that there are plenty of people out there who have figured out an answer to that. Maybe it's that you temporarily move to another country so you get to experience the alternate cultural differences and he can still go to school. Mm-hmm. Maybe now with what has happened with COVID, you can find a way for him to learn on the road. I don't know. But the point is that there's usually a way to do it that doesn't require something as dramatic as, okay, I'm leaving my kid at home and I'm going to go do that. Very rarely would I ever see that. And also, by the way, sorry, to your point before, you raised an excellent point, which is about people's big five for life and do they need money? And the answer is that sometimes they do. Sometimes people need money to fulfill their big five for life. But I can honestly tell you, in all the years that I used to teach the course where people learn about, they discover their big five for life, I never encountered a single person who gave me their big five for life item and I could not find a way for them to do that, at least in some way, for zero money.
I think it's time we also talk about your big five. I know you get asked this a lot.
It's all right.
But I think it tells a lot about you. So could you tell our listeners, what are your big five for life and your purpose for existing?
Sure. So my purpose for existing is to create museum day moments for myself and others. And so in part, we're doing that today. So thank you. I appreciate that.
I think you need to explain the concept of museum days.
Okay, so museum day is a concept that I introduced in the Big Five for Life book. And this is where, imagine if every moment of your life was recorded. Everything you did, everything you said, all the places that you went, all the ways in which you spent your time. And then towards the end of your life, a museum was built to honor you. Only the museum would show your life exactly how you lived it. And so if 80% of your time was spent on things that didn't bring you joy, then that would be 80% of your museum. Videos, kiosks, pictures, all kinds of stuff. And if you love spending time with your family or your friends or doing a hobby, but for no matter what reason, you only spent 2% of your life on those, then only 2% of your museum would show that. It'd be just a few pictures near the exit door. And so the idea is that imagine if heaven or the afterlife or however you perceive this whole life experience to work actually consists of you being the tour guide for your museum for all of eternity. And when we think about life in that context, that really changes the way in which we approach how we're going to spend our days. And so my purpose is to create museum day moments for myself and for others, something that they would be delighted to walk again and again and again in their own personal museum.
I see.
And sometimes they're happy moments. Sometimes it's just being there for another human being. My father passed away a little over a year ago. The time I spent with him at the end was not happy time. But it's special moments that I think if he's somewhere now walking his museum, like he'd be okay walking those moments and he'd probably be glad we spent the time together.
And what are your big five for life?
Number one is to have a loving relationship with the people that matter most to me. And I'll give you an example of the way having your big five for life opens up tremendous awareness. So when I learned that I was having a child and that it was going to be a daughter, I asked so many of my female friends, what's the one most important thing I need to know about being a dad? And not just being a dad, but being a great dad. Like, what's your favorite memories, all the rest of that? I learned so much in these questions and the answers that these women provided for me about creating traditions. That single comment about creating traditions, and many different women told me that, is what led to Adventure Days, which my daughter and I have been going on those ever since she was two. And so this idea of loving relationship with the people that matter most to you is something that is very easy to look at your calendar for the week and say, well, if I do everything that's on my to-do list, will I have enhanced the loving relationship I have, you know? Number two is travel the world. So again, thank you. I'm here in Germany doing a podcast interview. I walked around the gardens yesterday here in Hamburg. So I get to do a little traveling while I'm doing my thing. Number three is to master mind over matter. I'm fascinated by the human potential. And I think we scratch the surface of it barely in our everyday lives typically. And we are capable of so much more. So I'm fascinated by that. The next one is to inspire as many people as possible through the books that I write, through interviews like this. And then the last one is to write a song that breaks the top 10 of the pop charts.
And what's the motivation for the last one? And how far are you along with it?
Yeah, so I love the way that music can change our state. I mean, have you ever had the experience you're in your car or you're in your house and you're kind of in a down mood and then a song comes on that you love? Like, it's amazing, right? I mean, in seconds, your mood just clicks in a totally different way. So I love that. And I think it would be super cool to be a part of that, helping create that for people. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. Since I've put it out there, I've had, I can't tell you the number of professional musicians, artists, et cetera, that are like, let's collaborate. So, yeah.
Yeah. But you also don't want to do it for just changing the lives or the spirit of people. You also want to be in the top 10 of the charts. It seems to be important to you that it's a success.
Well, so the top 10 piece comes about because, like I said, I've been very driven to work hard at whatever I work on. And when I write books, I'll give you an example with this new book in the cafe series, Überraschung im Café Amrana Develop, that when I write a book, it will take me, I write about 10 pages a day. So that's a 250 page book. So that took me about 25 writing days. It will, for every writing day, I will do 2 to 3 editing days per page. So I'm fanatical about making sure that every word, every sentence that I'm super happy with it and that it has the impact I want to have. So to me, it's that same level of rigor that would create a song that would make it good enough that it would break the top 10 of the pop chart. So it's a way to push myself to greatness.
Okay, I see.
Because people have to like it, otherwise it's not going to make that.
Before, you were talking about the big five you get to know from other people. And I was wondering, are these big five often job related? Because as you know, this is a new work podcast.
Yeah.
Do many think about their jobs when they write down their big fives?
Well, very often I would see people say, I want a better job or I want a job that fulfills me. And then the next step in that thinking is, okay, so think about what your big five for life are and identify people who actually get paid to do, see, or experience those things. And so if you're, if you want to be an adventure traveler and you, one of your skill sets is writing, then okay, who's out there making a living as an adventure traveler writer, for example? And I know that sounds really obvious, but it's amazing to me that I went through decades of my life without someone connecting the dots for me that it's possible to get paid to do the things I love to do on the weekend. And there are already people out there in industries getting paid to do that. So why not choose that? You know, a really basic example is if you love kayaking and you're an accountant, be an accountant in a kayaking company.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's again, seems ridiculously obvious, but it wasn't to me for decades until I figured it out.
Yeah. I already did another episode of this podcast on the purpose topic, and it was quite interesting because the man I invited is a theologist, and he was talking a lot about searching for the purpose in your job is a new substitute for religion, because 100 years ago, people went to church on Sunday for find the meaning for their life, and now they're looking for that in their jobs. Do you agree with that?
Well, I suppose it, depending on where you were 100 years ago on the planet, it might have been one of those things where you became whatever your father was or whatever your mother was. So you didn't have much personal choice in that regard. And since that was culturally the norm and it was much harder to get out of that paradigm or out of that cycle, then maybe you sought your inspiration elsewhere. So I might be able to buy into that theory. These days, there's no rules or restrictions like that. You know, if you're driven, if you're motivated, if you find yourself a good teacher or a good coach, someone who can train you to do what, whether you want to be a graphic artist or a professional musician or a podcaster, if you can find yourself a good coach and you practice your craft and get really good at it, there's really no limit to what you could become.
Yeah, but I also feel like the thing searching for a purpose in your job, especially when I look at the younger generation, the generation that it's really important for them. They wouldn't take a job anymore that hadn't somehow an impact or give them the feeling of purpose. What changed in the last years?
Well, I think it's a gradual transition over time. So for example, let's say that 100 years ago, people had 2% satisfaction with their job and 90% it was just a responsibility. Then the next generation, their kids would only be exposed to that 2% as, oh, it could be like that. But over the years, as more and more people have transitioned into careers that are more meaningful, and we have an unlimited access to information these days, and if you want to find a job in a different area, it's so much easier to find examples of that or job opportunities with technology at our disposal. So all of that combined makes it easier to find a job that is more meaningful. And gives us better examples of people who are doing jobs that are more meaningful. And so why not? You know, it'd be like if every day all I ate was peanut butter crackers. And then all of a sudden I realized that there was pasta and pizza and, you know, chocolate mousse and ice cream. Why would I just keep eating peanut butter crackers every day?
But how are you looking at this younger generation? You mentioned before you have a daughter. She's 14 years old. Do you think this generation still needs your books, or are they looking for the purpose themselves?
Well, I think that would be awesome if that was the case, that the people who are coming up now had the self-awareness that would eliminate the need for them to ask the question, why are you here? I don't necessarily think that's the case, because life is very fascinating. Just about the time you think you've got it all figured out, it changes. And so as an example, this concept of pleasantly occupied that I talk about in the new book, that yes, my daughter has access to so much information, which would enable her to live an amazing life. She's also got a million distractions. You know, it's so easy to be sitting on your phone, just pleasantly occupied, not doing something amazing, not being bored, but just pleasantly occupied. So I think this generation has tremendous opportunities, but they've also got tremendous challenges too.
At the end, I wonder, I often read that you're very surprised by your own success. On the other hand, you're always writing, if you're doing something that fulfills your purpose for existing, you'll be good at it. You'll be passionate about it, and others might follow your lead.
Right.
So
why does it surprise me?
Yes.
I think it surprises me because of my background. And so I grew up in an environment where, I mean, my parents were very loving people, so it wasn't like Hannah's situation. But money was tight. I've been very, very poor numerous times in my life. And I didn't grow up with a tremendous amount of self-esteem either. I didn't see that I had a specific place in the world. I didn't think my contributions would be worthy of much in the world. And so I guess it still continues to surprise me that I get to do what I get to do on some level. I think probably I hope that never goes away, because it's humbling to receive a letter, and we get these so often. And right now we're getting them from the Ukraine, where young people, people of all ages, but young people in particular, you know, we got one the other day. I'm in a bomb shelter. I've been living here for a week. I'm reading The Cafe on the Edge of the World, and it's giving me hope to continue. And so if I ever get tired of hearing that, or ever am in awe of that, then I should stop doing what I'm doing, because then I'm no longer the guy that I want to be. I want to always be humbled by that and be grateful for that.
Were there times when they were worried about what you're doing, if it's the right path for you?
As a writer or prior to that?
As a writer.
Never doubted it as a writer. No. The feedback from people over the years, starting right from the very first book, the very first people that were reading it, surprised me, amazed me, humbled me, and yet so validated the decision to spend time as a writer. Yeah. Prior to that, 100%. I felt... I worked for super hard, but I felt empty most of the time. You know, it just wasn't the connection. I didn't feel like I was really doing anything special. I was getting paid, and that was great. And I was working hard, and that was nice, but I didn't feel a hard connection to the job that I was doing. And that started to feel pretty empty.
So thank you a lot for being my guest.
Thank you.
Have a great time here in Germany.
Thanks. Yeah. I want to leave your listeners here with one final thought. And that is, people often ask me, like, how would you go about transitioning your life from where it is to where it could be? And maybe they say, I'm thinking about writing a book. Is it possible? And I certainly did not grow up in an environment that was harder than so many other people. And as an adventure traveler, especially when you travel to third world countries, it really puts things in perspective of what exactly difficult looks like. You know, growing up in abject poverty in Southeast Asia or India or some of these other countries, that is far more challenging than anything I ever experienced. That said, I've seen people in those environments achieve monumental growth in terms of what they do with their life. And I always think to myself, if someone in that environment can make that courageous of a leap to get to a place where they love life, that they are happy, that they are fulfilled, certainly those of us who grew up in the Western world with a passport that's so easy to travel anywhere, we can do it too. And so no matter where you're at, no matter what you're thinking of yourself, I want everybody who's listening here to know that you define your big five for life. You find a good coach, you find some good examples, and you can make your life whatever you want it to be.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.